Hi, everyone. My name is Yael Jaffe, and despite my best efforts, I am not Jeremy Tabak, but I'm subbing in for Jeremy today to learn some Mishnah with all of you. I'm a student in the Hadar Kollel. I've been learning at Hadar for the past 2 years, and I'm really excited to be learning some of Masechet Tani, which is one of my favorite Masechetot of Mishnah. And I know that you all just started yesterday with Jeremy learning through this Masechet. So just to reorient us, Masechet Tani is all about fasts, and specifically fasts in response to natural times of crisis and disaster, and namely drought and famine. And so I know that in the first three Mishnayot, for those of you who were there yesterday, you all saw that the first three go through exactly when we start invoking the liturgy that we request or mention rain in the daily Amidah. And now we're about to get to the point where what happens if those prayers kind of fail and we find ourselves in a time of a season, namely in Eretz Yisrael, so during the winter that we would want rain and we're not getting rain, and what the kind of practices are to respond to that crisis. So starting with the fourth Mishnah, starting with Dalet. Higia shiva asar b'mar cheshvan, v'lo yarduk shamim, hitchilu hayichidim mit'anin shalosh ta'aniyot. So if the 17th of Cheshvan, and for those who remember, we saw that you start requesting rain on the 3rd of Cheshvan. So if by the 17th of the month of Cheshvan, we still haven't had any rain, this is when the yichidim start to fast these three fasts. So already there are some ambiguous terms here. So the yichidim, which means something like the individuals, and is interpreted by different readers of the Mishnah as maybe meaning wise people, people who study Torah, people who are involved in ritual life. Those are people who take on the responsibility of fasting, these three fasts. And the three fasts that they're referring to is a cycle that takes us through a week of Monday, Thursday, Monday fasting. So Yom Sheni, Yom Chamishi, and Yom Sheni again. So those are known as Bahab fasts, Bet, Hey, Bet, 252. So that's going to be this kind of core cycle of fasting that people are doing as a kind of maybe a symbolic outcry to God in terms of like self-affliction, and also maybe a form of resource management in a time when there's a drought and food might be low. So then just to go through the rest of the Mishnah, which is going to explain exactly what this fast looks like. Ochlin v'shotin mishech ha'shecha, u'mutarin v'balacha, u'v'chitza, u'v'sicha, u'v'ni'ilat ha'sandal, u'v'tashmish ha'mita. So these practices might sound familiar to some of us. Basically, it's describing what kind of fast this is. It's what we might call a minor fast day rather than a major fast day. So ochlin v'shotin mishech ha'shecha, meaning when the sun sets at night and the day really starts, like that day of the first day of the fast, they can still eat until sunrise the next day. So a 12 or 13 hour fast as opposed to a 24 or 25 hour fast. Umutarin b'malacha, v'chitza, v'sicha, etc. These are different things that we associate as self-affliction that we include in major fast days. So you can't, that is not included in this minor fast that they're conducting. So they can do work, they can shower and wash themselves, they can anoint themselves in oils and lotions, they can wear shoes, namely leather shoes, and they can have sex. So those are the five kind of extra additional self-affliction modes that we might have seen them not do if this was a more serious kind of fast. Okay, great. Moving on to the next Mishnah. So the fifth. Higia Rosh Chodesh Kislev v'lo yarduv shamim, Beit Din gozrin shalosh taniot al hatzibor. So now we've arrived, we've done this first round of fasting by these elders, and actually we've surpassed the amount of time that we've gotten to Rosh Chodesh Kislev. And we can look at a calendar if we want, which is, I'm not sure if this will show, but either way, basically we've surpassed the amount of time, but now we're at Rosh Chodesh Kislev, the next month, and still no rain has fallen. And then we say that a Beit Din, the court of the area, should kind of command the whole public to partake in this round of three fasts of a Bahab fast cycle. Ochlin v'shatin mishech ha'shecha, u'mutarin v'malacha v'rchitza v'sicha u'v'nilat ha'sandal u'v'tashmish ha'mita. This is exactly the same kind of minor fast that does not involve these kinds of self-affliction. It's just kind of a 12 or 13 hour fast that is conducted, maybe both simultaneously, as we mentioned before, as a mode of supplication to God and also as a mode of resource management. the only thing that's changed in this kind of second round is we've expanded the audience. We've gone from it just being these yichidim, these maybe special individuals, people with a lot of knowledge or skills, who are kind of saddled with that burden at first. And now we've expanded it to the whole community. And so we've now done two of these cycles back to back. I guess we'll move on to the next one. Six. Avru elu v'lo na'anu. If these pass and they still haven't been answered, meaning rain still hasn't fallen, the beitin goes v'in shalosh ta'aniot acherot al hatzibor. If those pass, we're going to do another round of these, of this cycle of sheni chamishi sheni fast, again on the whole community. But here's what we'll see is going to happen in the next line. Ochlin v'shotin mi ba'od yom. V'asurin v'malacha uv'rechitza uv'sicha uv'nilat ha'sandal uv'tashmish ha'mita v'noalin et ha'merchatzaot. So two things have happened, or three actually. One, this fast actually starts with the sunset because we see ochlin v'shotin mi ba'od yom, meaning they can eat and drink while it's still the previous day. V'asurin v'malacha, etc. And they can't do these things, meaning they have to engage in this kind of extra self-affliction that is very similar to what we might associate with Yom Kippur, that they can't do any labor, they can't wash themselves, they can't use creams or oils, they can't wear real shoes, and they can't have sex. And then the last thing that happens is v'no'alin et ha'merchatzaot, and they lock the public showers, which is to say that not only do we kind of command everyone to prohibit themselves personally from doing these kinds of more regular and day-to-day activities of kind of self-care and washing of oneself, but we actually prevent the public from partaking in those things and we shut it down. And this might be where some of the resonances actually come up around the expectations of like private and public restrictions that some of us are experiencing now in the time of COVID-19. And this kind of systemic shutdown of society that they're starting to hope kind of cultivate maybe a sense of urgency around this natural crisis that they're facing in the Mishnah, where they have no rain. And also at the same time, this is a great way to conserve water in a drought. So they're closing down the public showers and people are personally not partaking in these kind of regular activities that they might otherwise. And that's our third round of fasts. So we've had one round that was just the Yechidim, one round that was minor fast days, but with the entire public, and one round that was the entire public, but an increased extremity of fast day with other types of self-affliction involved. Is there an obligation on the Yechidim, or is there just a tendency for the Yechidim to accept fasts upon themselves? I think that's a great question about the style of the Mishnah in general. Is it speaking descriptively or prescriptively, right? So if we go back to that first Mishnah we were looking at together, number four, Hitchilu ha-Yechidim, they begin to do this. And often the Mishnah will kind of go back and forth between that language as meaning something that's descriptive of the way that people are just kind of want to behave and something that's prescriptive about like who we are expecting to do what and when. So yeah, I think that a great answer to why those people might be the first people to take it on, it could be that they're just the first people who would want to take it on or maybe really perceive the severity of the situation. And so it might be more descriptive than prescriptive. But either way, once we're kind of commanding the entire community to do it, it seems like the language of Beit Din Gozrin, that, you know, the court will command this, definitely seems more prescriptive. Okay, so we've finished this third cycle of fasting. And now I'm going back into the sixth Mishnah. Avru elu velo na'anu, Beit Din Gozrin alehem od sheva, shehen shlosh esrei ta'aniyot al hatzibor. Once these have passed and they still have not been answered, the court should declare upon them, meaning the entire public, another seven, which would amount to 13 fast days of the tzibor. So this is a little bit confusing, but basically how this is explained is we've previously seen them in groups of three, and now we're gonna see a cycle of seven that would go Monday, Thursday, Monday, Thursday, Monday, Thursday, Monday. So that would total up to those seven, plus the previous two rounds of public fasts, and that makes 7 plus 6, 13. And the next description is gonna tell us about how these last, this additional round, which is both longer and more extended time-wise, is also gonna be more intense even than our kind of similar to Yom Kippur style fasts. Hare elu yeterot al harishonot. These are more, worse, more intense than the first ones. Because on these, we blow the shofar and we lock the stores, the storefronts. So two things that are happening. One is we're kind of sounding this cry, which is obviously we associate with high holidays and also with the Beit HaMikdash and with like big moments of crying out for salvation. So that's one thing that we're adding. And another thing is the thing that really feels very similar to what a lot of us are experiencing right now, is that all of public life is kind of shut down. And this could be both, again, a practical measure of preserving resources and energy, and also a way of kind of trying to cultivate a sense of urgency and maybe fear in people to really apprehend just how serious the situation is at this point by not having any rain. So then the last thing that they stipulate in this Mishnah is Basheni matin im chashecha uvechamishi mutarin mipnei kavod haShabbat. So they stipulate that on Monday, they open just a little bit the stores when the sun sets, when it gets dark. And on Thursday, they totally open the stores because of honor for Shabbat, meaning that's when people are shopping. And actually, I just saw a question, which is why Monday and Thursday? Market days, Torah reading days? I would say this is probably more focused on the market days, although those might be related, because just as we saw that people are kind of afflicting themselves specifically on those days, those are also the days when we're going to allow more lax prohibitions on these storefronts. And the assumption seems to be that that's just for people to get their basic necessities. And those are the days when people really need shops to be open and to be able to do some kind of foray into public life and into trade and business. So right, just to refresh where we are now, we've had one round of just kind of the elite, the Yechidim fasting, one round of the tzibur, the public fasting in an equal kind of low level way, one round of the tzibur in this medium high level Yom Kippur style way, and then this doubled down 7 days cycle of the most intense fasting we've seen so far that also involves some really intense degree on of a societal shutdown. Yeah, I see another comment, kind of cruel to allow food stores open on fast days. Yeah, I mean, it does make you wonder, like, obviously the people who are involved in this are probably adults and children are probably still eating and people are still in need of food. And also to remember that these aren't 7 straight days, right? You're alternating one day and then a 2-day break, one day and then a 2-day break. And you're certainly never fasting on Shabbat. So people are still in need of their basic groceries and they're conducting some of public life. Yeah, they could have shopped on Wednesday and Friday. Those are the days when they're trying to keep stores closed. I assume that, that's a really fair point that on the same days that people are fasting, those are also the days when they might need to shop. It's actually Basheni Matinim Chashecha. I'm not sure if that's describing I'm pretty sure it means Monday night, which they might already be breaking their fasts at that point. It could be that once they break their fast, that's also when they're allowed to go out and shop. But yeah, it does seem particularly difficult to go shopping for food while one is fasting. Assume that those are the same people doing those things. Yeah, okay, great. So now we've extended a lot. We're assuming that people are in a real state of crisis now. And we've moved significantly through the winter months in Eretz Israel and people are kind of devolving and really panicking around this drought and the potential famine that's coming because of it. And now I think we can get to the last Mishnah in this perek. Avru elu velo na'anu, mima'atin v'masa u'matan, v'vinyan u'v'nitiya, v'erusin u'v'nisuin, u'v'she'elat shalom bin adam l'chavero, kivnei adam hanizufin l'makom. If these pass and they still haven't been answered, and at this point I'm pretty sure I did try to do some of the math before, they're at the end of the month of Tevet, which is halfway through the winter months. At this point, if all this time has passed and they still haven't been answered, they should decrease trade or business, they should stop building, they should stop planting, they should decrease engagements and weddings, and greeting one another, she'ilat shalom b'ed adam l'chaveiro, is a way of, you know, requesting after one's health or well-being is just, it's social distancing. It's really what it is. Kivnei adam hanizufin l'makom, like people who are reprehensible to God. So there's this kind of imagining of like a sort of performance, but also it's very genuine that this is how people are kind of living their lives at this point, that they're feeling really dejected, and also trying to reflect as if this is something that is retribution for bad behavior. and the conducting of all public life in that light. Continuing through to the end, Hayechidim chozrim mitanim ad sheyetzei nisan. Okay, so actually, we'll stop there for a moment. This is the Yechidim, these elite people, they should continue fasting until Nisan is over, which is already, as we know, as like about where we are in the year. This is the point when we stop asking for rain because we want it to be the harvest season of the summer. But we still, at the beginning of that period, ask that the elite people who started us off with the fast also continue fasting, which is to say that public life might eventually return to normal more so, or people might be conducting these restrictions on their public and private lives, but not quite fasting all the time. But there will still be these people in certain positions of influence or power who are also continuing to fast, potentially both, again, as I mentioned before, as a mode of both preserving resources and also supplicating to God. So this last line in the perek, Yatsani san velo yarduk shamim siman klala. But actually, this is an error on the Sepharia website, and it should say, according to the vast majority of manuscripts, Yatsani san v'yarduk shamim. If Nisan ends, and finally then they get rain, siman klala. That rain is actually a kind of cursed rain, or it is a sign of retribution or something like that. Shene Amar in Shmuel, halo katsir chitim hayom. And this is referring to a pasuk in Shmuel that, just to locate us in what's happening in that perek. Basically, Shaul has just been appointed or anointed as king. And right after the inauguration, Shmuel is kind of going on a tirade against the Jewish people for ever requesting a king in the first place, which doesn't seem to be kind of part of the original plan of how Jewish life in Israel would look. And in that process of kind of berating the people, he says that as kind of a sign of their wrongdoing, he is going to pray for rain to come at that moment, which is the harvest season. And so as a punishment, he's bringing rain, which we usually associate as a sign of blessing and fruitfulness. Rain in this time period is actually a sign of curse and actually punishment. And so halo katsir chitim hayom is, isn't this the time of the harvest season? And still he says, I'm just going to read the rest of the pasuk. I'm going to cry out to God, and God's going to send thunder and rain down upon all of you. And you will know and you will see that all this great evil that you have done in the eyes of God to request a king. And so this is just a very fundamental instance where rain is actually a bad thing and a symbol of the Jewish people's wrongdoing. So that rounds out this whole long cycle of fasting and kind of ends on a pretty sour note. But I think the idea is that people are trying to cultivate a disposition to their public life that carries with them the awareness of the real severity of their situation. And that I think feels very resonant in a time right now when it's kind of confusing whether these practices are just ritualized ways of crying out to God. Is it a kind of dramatization of their situation to be like, God, look at us, look at how much we're suffering. And to try and amplify that call. Or is it also a practical measure of, you know, limiting resource usage and water? And it seems like it could really be a combination of both. And I think that's very similar to some of the restrictions that we're trying to practice right now, that they're both meant as practical measures to kind of reduce the spread of this illness and also can cultivate a sense of real seriousness and awareness of just how much people are suffering and about even if we're not on the front lines confronting the severity of this illness, it can kind of heighten our consciousness around it and maybe inculcate some more spiritual disposition toward that. If it were a Shemitah year with a drought, would the fast still be commanded? If you aren't planting and harvesting, rain isn't as essential. Yeah, so if you're not starting to plant, that can be true, but if things are still growing, presumably, and you're allowed to eat them fully during the Shemitah year, you might still want there to be rain. I'm not sure if there's anything on how this intersects with a Shemitah year, but that's a really good question, and it might affect kind of the desperation of the situation if it's not about trying to develop resources for the next year. I can stop sharing now, I guess. Yeah, is the Sepharia error the low before you do? Yeah, exactly. Even in the Kahati Mishnah that I have right in front of me, it's Yatsani San Vyardug Shamim. And I think it makes a lot more sense, especially I took a look earlier at some of the manuscripts, and it seems that that is the most authoritative version. And it makes sense more so, I think, with this allusion to Shmuel, where the fact that rain does come is a siman klala, rather than the continual drought being an obvious siman klala. But yeah, that seems to be the error in Sefaria. I see. I recall learning public Torah reading Monday, Thursday were market days when farmers from outside cities came to the city to sell. They would have been impacted by drought. Yeah, absolutely. So it seems that this might be assuming that there are also local stores that are selling things that they have like in stock. But yeah, Monday and Thursday being Torah reading days are definitely associated with Monday and Thursday being these market days. I think this comes up in Masechet Megillah and some other places, and they're discussing like when are people most likely to be able to gather to in public spaces, or more most likely to already be gathering in public spaces, such that they should also be doing rituals. Is there anything in the Mishnah that suggests these fasts are effective in changing the weather? It's a great question. I think, again, it falls in line for me, at least, with this kind of descriptive versus prescriptive question. Great answer from Sarah Brooks, second paragraph of the Shema, right? There's definitely a lot of evidence in the Torah that there is a concept that there's direct cause and effect between our prayers, our supplication to God, our good behavior, and natural phenomena. And that is definitely held through kind of, I think, in the Mishnah with this language of Avru Elu Velo Na'anu, that the assumption is that people ought to just be answered for these prayers. But there's also this assumption that's a very live possibility that they won't be answered. So yeah, there definitely seems to be this cause and effect imagination of how these can not just sustain resources or whatever, but also really have an impact on God's will and affect there to be rain and for a drought to end. If we have sinned, I'm just looking back at the questions again, if we have sinned and therefore have a drought, how does the fast change anything? I think the act of fasting, as we associate it with both minor fast days and major fast days, is usually associated with trying to do tshuva, with trying to do some kind of mode of repentance. So that can also be one of the dispositions that's assumed of the people who are taking this on, and maybe even of the yichidim, who are the first to take it on and last to kind of put it down, that they might be more inclined toward doing that kind of self-reflection and taking responsibility for bad behavior. And if that's really what the fasting is about, then it would make sense to say that those people are maybe Talmi de Chachamim, which is often the explanation of who that group of people is, because maybe it really is about this being a ritual and a spiritual practice, more so than it is about preserving resources or conducting public life in a different way for other reasons. Yeah, any other questions or comments? I think we're gonna close early, if not, which I assume is fine by everyone. Afflicting oneself is a path to tshuva. I would say those things are definitely borne out, right, by the process of Yom Kippur being like the most heavily afflicted fast day. Well, aside from the ones that we see in this Mishnah, which seem to ramp it up even further beyond that, for when they like shut down public life entirely. But yeah, it seems that that kind of self-affliction is definitely associated with doing self-reflection. And that, you know, that obviously has a limit on it. Like associating, like self-inflicting pain upon ourselves is definitely not like the only or the best way to pursue self-improvement or anything like that. But there's definitely precedent for that in our own rituals and in our lives to say that maybe depriving us of our usual goods and resources and practices of like how to take care of ourselves can also force us to reflect on our behavior and the things that maybe we can live without or can't live without. And stripping down to the bare minimum might kind of make us reflect on what's the most important. Okay. Thank you so much for allowing me to step in on Jeremy's behalf today. I hope that you can all return to learning with him tomorrow and at least tell him that I did him justice. But yeah, yashar koach to all of you for making this a part of your daily practice. I think it's amazing, and Tanit is such a fun ride, and I think it's so relevant right now. So yashar koach to all of you, and enjoy your learning. Have a good day, everyone.